This is Destination Midnight.
You are listening to the Dreadhouse podcast.
In 1601, Anton de Seer was born in Lincolnshire to parents Henry and Martha, a noble family of landowners. Aged 16, he was promised in marriage to a local girl named Louisa. They married in 1617. De Seer was 17 and Louisa was 16. De Seer's parents allowed them to live in their stately home and were given two servants. It wasn't until 1621 that the couple announced they were having their first child. On the 27th of February 1622, Louisa gave birth to the couple's first child, Tarquin. Tarquin's baby years, much like most of his early childhood, were unremarkable. 2 years after his birth, in May 1624, the couple had their second child, Felina. Anton, despite like most men of his time, was an attentive father. He would play with the children, inventing games, reading to them, and taking them both on frequent trips to Hertfordshire and Middlesex to visit his friend Nicholas Rainton. In 1627, age 5, Tarquin fell ill, not a serious illness, more akin to flu-type symptoms, which was easily mistaken for the plague. Although he rarely came in contact with people outside of his family's social circle. He was bedridden for 8 days, and only after that returned to his normal boisterous demeanour. Strangely, Felina and the other family members were not affected, nor did they contract anything that Tarquin had. Nobody in the household noticed or recorded this as strange or odd. As Tarquin and Felina grew, Anton would take them on trips further afield and teach them activities according to people of their assumed status. His favourite activities were fencing and hunting, and the children were taught in both disciplines. Felina enjoyed the fencing and had become quite skilled, whilst Tarquin favoured the hunting, although he wasn't good at aiming. Anton grew weary of their home in Lincolnshire and decided to move the family south to Hertfordshire, and he found a beautiful house just south of Ware. This suited Anton well. The children still had the beautiful countryside of Hertfordshire to enjoy, and Anton himself was close to his longtime friend Nicholas Rainton. He would visit his friend once a week in his Forty Hill home in Middlesex. Rainton would take them all out hunting. The only person who opposed the move was Louisa. It took her too far away from her family in the area she grew up in. She didn't quite feel the connection that her husband and children did with their new home. Louisa found the new home isolating and lonely, with only the servants for company. She would write frequently to her family in Lincolnshire and share her unhappiness. On a late autumn day on the 25th of October 1635, Rainton arrived at their Hertfordshire house and suggested the whole family go out on a hunting trip. Anton agreed and packed up the family. They all went out with guns in hand and searching for deer. Anton suggested they split into two teams, so Anton sided with Felina, and Rainton and Tarquin made up the other team. The two teams drifted off slowly away from each other into the dense Hertfordshire forest. "Father," whispered Felina, "I see one." "Hold your nerve," Anton mouthed. "Take aim." Felina raised her gun and moved her sight level and gently squeezed the trigger. And then a large slop of a body dropped into the undergrowth. "Anton!" cried Rainton. "Oh, God, no!" "What is it?" shouted Anton back in somewhat distress. "You've shot Tarquin," replied Rainton. They rushed his body back to the house and did their best to stem the bleeding. A doctor was sent for immediately. The doctor informed Anton that he'd done all he could and gave the boy a few hours. Tarquin de Seer died on October 26, 1635 at 3:16 a.m, surrounded by his parents and sister. Life was never the same for the de Seers again after that. Christmas, birthday, Easter, never properly celebrated, only observed. Anton slipped into full depression. He never recovered from the loss. Anton was so taken with grief at the loss, he refused to leave the house. Louisa was concerned. She wrote to his friend Lord Rainton to ask him to attend their home and spend time with Anton, and try to engage with him. when Rainton arrived, Anton wouldn't leave his bedroom. Louisa, completely out of options and at a place of despair, broke down in front of Rainton. Nicholas Rainton consoled her and said, "Is there no one who can help him? Are your family aware?" Louisa wrote her plight to her sister, and within 2 weeks she received a reply from her. Her sister wrote of a man by the name of Linford Shobley. He had unusual powers and could help people come to terms with their grief. Louisa sent for Shobley at once, and within 12 days Linford Shobley arrived at their Hertfordshire home. He was a tall man, around 6'2", thin with jet black greasy hair and pale skin, hidden under a top hat. He carried a brown leather bag, not dissimilar to a doctor's bag. He stepped out of his carriage and walked up to the front door of Anton's home. He knocked, and the door was opened by the family's butler, Evans. "I'm expected," he said. "Mr. Shobley, I presume," said Evans. "This way," Linford Shobley followed. He was taken to the drawing room, where Louisa was waiting anxiously. Louisa had gone into some considerable detail about the situation to Shobley in her original letter, so he had a clear understanding. "Where is your husband?" he asked. "In his room." "Evans will take you there," said Louisa. The butler gestured towards the staircase and Shobley followed. Evans led him up the stairs to Anton's room and knocked on the door. There was no response. He knocked again. Just as he was about to speak, Shobley blurted out, "Mr. Desir, my name is Linford Shobley. I can help you." Anton shouted back through the doorway, "I don't want your help." "I believe you do. You must allow me to enter," said Shobley. The door opened ajar, and a curious eye looked out at the impertinence. Mr. Shobley pushed the door, and Anton staggered back. "Please sit down," he said. He refused to sit down, and an uncomfortable face-off began. "Fetch me an item of your son's clothing," said Shobley. "No, get out of my room," said Anton. "Mr. Desir, I must insist." He continued to stare expressionless without blinking. After 30 seconds passed, Anton felt uneasy and then looked away. When he looked back at Shobley's face, he hadn't moved or changed, still no blinking. Anton sat down, finally. "I require an item of your son's clothing." "What for?" said Anton. "I require an item of your son's clothing." Anton sat up and moved towards the door and then banged on it. "Evans!" he shouted. Then footsteps could be heard and made a full stop outside the door as it opened ajar. Anton led towards the gap. "Please fetch a shirt belonging to Tarquin and bring it back here as soon as you can." Evans turned on his heel and footsteps leading away could be heard. Anton turned around to face Shobley and saw he'd pulled 3 ornate candle holders with candles out of his bag and arranged them in an equilateral triangle. He pulled a small jar from his bag and started to release the contents that looked like dust all around the triangle. "What is that for?" said Anton. There was no response from Shobley. Then came a knock at the door. "Sir," called Evans through the door, and Anton went to the door and collected the shirt from Evans. "Thank you, Evans," said Anton. "That'll be all." And then he handed the shirt to Shobley. Linford Shobley folded the shirt and placed it at the centre of the triangle. "I need to know what you're doing." Shobley cleared his throat. "I know you'll want to see your son one last time, I'm sure." "Yes, but how? I'm not sure I'm comfortable with what you're doing, sir," said Anton. "When you see your son, do not cross the threshold of the triangle. Speak, and he will hear you." "Sir, I am not comfortable with this sorcery." And as Anton spoke, Shobley started chanting.
Sir, Maurice, just a neurophobic,
yeah. Do you have a coin? Said Shobley. What? Said Anton. A coin for Shiren. He needs an offering to carry the dead. You have to pay the boatman. Anton reached for his dresser and grabbed a silver coin and handed it to Shobley. Shobley threw the coin into the triangle and it promptly vanished into a sound. A light appeared beneath the shirt and then started to move through it and then hovered floating in the space above it. A face started to appear. Anton's eyes widened as he recognised the face. Tarquin, gasped Anton.
Father,
whispered Tarquin. Tarquin, Anton repeated as he moved towards the triangle. Do not cross the threshold, warned Shobley. He continued to move forward and kicked over one of the candles. Shobley dived towards the candle and picked it up, but it had extinguished before he could. You've broken the link. Get him back, begged Anton. I can't, the link has been broken. Your son's spirit has been disrupted. He cannot rest. What can be done? Inquired Anton. Nothing. We have to wait for your son to make his presence known. Shobley gathered up all his belongings and promptly left and was never seen again by any member of the Desir family. Anton dragged himself down the main stairs to the drawing room where Louisa sat waiting anxiously. I saw him. He was in my bedroom, Anton whispered. I could nearly touch him. Louisa looked confused at his words. Who are you speaking of, dear? Tarquin, whispered Anton. Tarquin, shouted Louisa, what are you talking about? The man you brought here brought him back, and then went on to explain the whole episode in great detail. Just then there was a knock on the door, and Anton rushed to open it, and of course there was no one there. He stood in the doorway, looking dejected, with one hand on the doorknob. Louisa came up behind him and closed the door. Come sit down, she said, as the couple walked towards the drawing room. Out of the corner of their eye, they saw a figure running past. They knew it couldn't be Felina. She was with the Louisa's family in Lincolnshire. The figure would appear off and on for the next few years and seen by a number of different people. In late October 1674, Anton Desir was sitting in his garden enjoying his tea when he saw a figure about 100 yards away. His eyesight wasn't what it used to be. There were three knocks, like someone was locking on a door. And then the figure started waving. Tarquin, mouthed Anton. He heard a breathy sound of the word father. 1 week later, in November, Anton Desir died. He never recovered from the loss of Tarquin Desir. Over the coming centuries, it has been said that if you are in the area of North London, Capel Manor or Fawlty Hall, and you hear three disjointed knocks, you can see Tarquin Desir waving at you. He will follow you. Do not let him catch up and get close.